Definitely. Waiting on the world to change. Keep on waiting. That's going in my head right now.
Is that John Mayer?
I don't know. Don't you ever just have like little pieces of songs that pop into your head, like in situations? Sometimes I have an ongoing musical in my head to every situation that's going on. I don't always sing them out loud, but I do always have some sort of song in my head most of the time.
Yeah. Welcome, everybody, to State of Murder. I'm your host, Selena Cooper.
And I'm your other host, Amber Ratzliff.
And we are in the great state of Texas this week. The stars at night are big and bright, deep in the heart of Texas.
I already sang my All My Exes Live in Texas song last week. I don't know if you put it in, though, because I haven't listened to Oklahoma.
I think I put all the songs.
Okay, so any other Texas songs?
Although this is like after Kansas's episode now, so.
Well, whatever. I sang it at one point.
We did.
So, but the big state of Texas was the Lone Star State.
The Lone Star State. And we have a lot of politically charged cases for you this week.
I'm realizing we're having a theme lately of mine and your political beliefs. So I hope everybody's okay with that. But Selena and I are pretty political. We have a lot of strong... Selena and I are very opinionated and love to share our opinions, I think. So I think that's fine. Yeah.
But I mean, we still got the same amount of listeners for Oklahoma that we did for all our other episodes. So nobody gave up.
I guess it'll be a true test after... It'll be a true test after Kansas, because see if people listen to us after our Oklahoma rant.
Did go on a bit of a rant there, but it's an upsetting time and there are upsetting things going on. And I mean, this is kind of our outlet to be able to talk about these things and to let our opinions out.
If you were on my Facebook, you would notice that I normally never post on Facebook. I don't post social media. I am not a social media person at all. And I probably in the last month have posted more on social media than I have in the last 10 years. I feel called to it. No, I take that back. When Trump got elected, I also posted quite a bit on social media because I was so upset. But this comes probably a little bit more this time around than then, but I don't know.
Yeah, definitely. And there's a lot of thoughts and feelings. So when we're recording this, it is after the whole Juneteenth rally and everything that happened. And I'm going to call it that because, I mean, even though he moved it one day, people were still holding the comparisons and stuff. And good to know that not a lot of people went to his thing. He had to cancel a lot of stuff. So, and thankfully there was no violence. There was no attacks against protesters or anything like that. So
that was good. Leading up to it. And his kind of threats really made me question what was going to happen. So I was a little bit worried. Shout out to Generation Z and their campaign to take up all the tickets. I thought that was freaking hilarious. Just a great, great moment. It made me really excited for the younger generations and their willingness to mobilize and, you know, show their dissatisfaction in a pretty creative way.
Yeah, it was nice to see, and that's how things are right now, is you got to make a difference in any way that you can right now, whether you are marching or sending emails and writing letters, posting things, hoping to educate others or hoping to share with others. Registering people to vote is huge right now. So I know today, that the time we're recording this was New York's primary and
Kentucky and Tennessee.
Kentucky's
a really bad one, because were you reading how normally they have 3,200 polls and they lowered it to 200 polls, and they're one of their biggest counties, Jefferson County, which has 600,000 voters, only has one polling place, and it's a predominantly African-American county. So that's some fucking bullshit.
It is. So do your part for our listeners in the United States. Do not throw away your right to vote. People are trying to take it away from you. Don't let them do that. Make your voices heard and yeah, we do not need 4 more years of this.
No.
Because if this is how we're getting close to the end of 4 years, what do you think the next 4 is going to start out as? Like, last time started out with tiki torch riots and like protesting. I'd hate to see what happens next.
Yeah. We need some change in this world.
We do. So let's get into our Texas stories. What do you have for us this week?
All right. So this week I'm going to be sharing about James Byrd Jr. So now the first time I heard his name, I had just graduated from high school. I was 17 and living in rural Nebraska. Although I had lived in Seattle and felt like I had a pretty good grasp on the world, as many freshly out of high school kids did, I knew racism had existed. I had heard of Emmett Till and how he was lynched in 1955. My dad would always talk about the civil rights movement and Martin Luther King Jr. So my dad, I don't know if I've mentioned this, but he did march with Martin Luther King Jr. in Washington, D.C. So he shows us he had a little, I don't know, in the 60s, whatever kind of video cam, handheld video camera that is, but he had videos of that. So he showed that to us. I love history, and I even did in high school. So I knew about Jim Crow laws and about segregation, but those things were in the past for me. I lived in this safe white world bubble in rural Nebraska. That was until June 1998, and news stations started reporting on James Byrd Jr. and what happened to him in eastern Texas. James Byrd Jr. was born on May 2nd, 1949 to Stella and James Sr. James was one out of 8 children. He was actually born in Beaumont, Texas, but he grew up in a town called Jasper. So Jasper County, Texas also. His father was a deacon of their church and his mom taught Sunday school. And James grew up singing in the choir. James actually did really, really well in school. And his class was the last class to graduate in segregation in Jasper County. And that was in 1967. Even though he did really well in school, he didn't end up going to college like his sisters had. Instead, James ended up marrying fairly quickly out of high school, and he had 3 children named Renee, Ross, and Jamie. Now, James wasn't a perfect man. He spent time in prison for petty theft, and he had a problem with alcohol. But by the time he moved back to Jasper in 1996, he had started to turn his life around and was going to AA. He was pretty well liked in the community. His friends stated that he was pretty musically talented and very charismatic. And he was really known for kind of walking around the town and seeing and saying hi to everybody because he didn't drive.
Oh, okay.
So on June 8th, 1998, James left his parents' house and started to walk home when 3 white men drove up in a pickup truck and offered him a ride. So James apparently knew one of them, so he accepted the ride and hopped in the back. Instead of taking James home, these 3 men ended up driving him to an isolated county road. And just to give you guys warning, James' death is very brutal. And so some of my description might be a little triggering. So just warning, fair warning on that. So they ended up beating him up with a baseball bat, spray painting his face, and then they urinated on him. Then if that wasn't enough to make your skin crawl and make you pretty dang angry, they ended up tying him to the bumper of their truck using log chains. So they're kind of like chains that you can like drag logs with, and started to drag him over 3 miles. There was, So there was evidence that James was alive during a lot of this, as the medical examiner noted that it appeared he had moved from one side to the other when it became too painful. Like, I don't know, I've fallen and scraped my knees, so times about a bazillion. The friction from the road rash wore it down to the bone where it was dragging on the ground. His ribs were all broken from the impact of being bumped around. The medical examiner stated that he believed that James had fought to keep his head up off the ground during the dragging, as there was less injury to his head and the brain, and his skull was completely intact, so there wasn't like fractures in it. About 1.5 miles into his body being tossed from side to side, he ended up hitting a cement culvert. So it's kind of like a ditch in the side where like the cement is raised up. That resulted in his right arm, neck, and head being ripped from his body. The rest of his body was dragged about 1.5 miles down the road, where then these three men dumped the rest of his body in front of an African-American church. James's body was discovered by a motorist the following morning. It's a very tragic way to die.
Wait, the body was discovered, the part at the church or the part on the road?
I believe it was the part at the church.
Oh.
And that it doesn't say really, nowhere did it say, but just I'm going from like where then the police ended up showing up. When the police started to investigate, they sadly had a pretty obvious trail to follow. So along the area where James had been dragged, they found a wrench with the name Barry, or just with, I guess, the word Barry, B-E-R-R-Y, engraved on it. And then a lighter that had KKK with the name the word possum engraved on it. And they followed the trail of 81 pieces of James's body along the road.
Oh my God. It's horrible, but also I'm really glad these people are fucking idiots and left shit with their names on them.
Yes.
Because they deserve to be caught. And if justice is not served, I'm going to be so mad, but I have a feeling I'm going to be so pissed at this episode. Okay, go ahead.
So we'll see what happens. So the police knew who all of this evidence pointed to. Also, there was one witness who could place James traveling with three men in a pickup truck in the early morning parts of June 8th. Sadly, this witness was a friend of James who had been unable to give him a ride from his parents' house. So, I don't know. It doesn't say a lot.
They must feel terrible.
I would feel so awful and guilty. So hopefully he doesn't, because it's not his fault that this happened.
No.
But I would definitely... Like, if that was anything with me, I would totally feel terrible.
I know.
So, the three white men were quickly identified as Sean Barry. So, remember the wrench with the Barry engraved on it. Lawrence Brewer and John King. So, I'm just going to share a little bit about these three men. Lawrence Brewer was born on March 13th, 1967. He ended up serving time in prison for drug possession and burglary. During his time in prison, he ended up joining a white supremacist gang in order to survive in prison. He felt that that was his only way, is to do an allegiance to somebody. We'll talk about that later on, but just keep that in mind. Brewer was known around town for being a white supremacist, and during the trial, a psychiatrist testified that Brewer did not appear to repent his crimes at all. So that's all really about him. I don't want to get a lot into these people just because I don't want to focus a lot on them, but just a little synopsis so we understand who they kind of are.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot known, because a lot of times all of the cases I read, they focused on John King.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if he was the ringleader or not, probably just based off of his history. I'm going to say he probably was.
And so, he was the only one who didn't leave something with his name on it, huh?
Actually, no. So the KKK lighter with possum on it was his. Was his nickname in prison. So that's his prison nickname. Don't know why. It didn't say.
Stupid nickname for a stupid person.
Did he like to play dead? I don't get it. Like, did he look like a giant rat? I don't know. I didn't want to look at pictures of his stupid
face. I'm going to vote for that he looked like a rat, but that would also be very insulting to possums.
Yes.
To compare them to white supremacists, because possums eat mosquitoes, so they're good for and us. Ticks.
Yeah. No, I'm all for possums, but not for this guy. So no. In one of the articles I read, this one was actually on Murderpedia. They had an interview with his father, and his father shared that he didn't raise King to be racist at all. And that he was really deeply troubled by what happened. And he even ended up apologizing to the Byrd family about what his son had done. He was born in Mississippi. They were pretty poor. However, by 1998, King was deeply tied to white supremacy. He had also spent time in prison. In fact, he became best friends with Brewer while they spent time on the Bato prison block. I don't really know a lot about prison, but I know there's blocks. And so King, also like Brewer, ended up joining a white supremacist gang in prison. When he was there, he started writing letters to people proclaiming that he had an allegiance to the Aryan Nation. prior to his release, one inmate testified that King had started sharing and stating that he vowed to kidnap and kill a black man so that he could get his blood tie, like an initiation into the Aryan gang. So he needed to kill a black guy in order to be initiated into this gang. And so that was one of his reasons why he lynched Byrd the way he did. King, his goal when he got out was to start forming a new white supremacist group in Jasper County. And he felt that what he did to Byrd would help him recruit for that. So it'd be a big recruiting tool that they were able to lynch this man. He was totally obsessed with the KKK and had all sorts of racist tattoos. So I remember in our Idaho one, we were talking about all the racist tattoos that that couple that I shared about had on them. So he also had a number of tattoos, but his favorite tattoo was a tattoo of a black man being hung. And so he would like make it dance and he would say, look at the N-word dancing, like when he would show it off, thinking he was all cool. So
what a jackass.
Yeah. So not the greatest guy in the world. And then there isn't really a lot known about Sean Barry. So he's the one where they found the wrench with his name on it, except for he was born February 12th, 1975. It was actually his truck that was used during the lynching of James. During the trial or during the interview, Brewer had stated that Barry had actually slit James' throat prior to the dragging. So he was dead before they drug him. But as I mentioned before, the medical examiner was pretty sure that didn't happen because he was alive and had kept his head lifted while he was drugged and there was no signs that somebody had slit his throat.
Also, if he was dead already, I don't think there would have been as much like blood. Like, don't think functions would stop working, and because they can tell, well, they can tell when you die, like if you were, wounds are post-mortem or pre-mortem. I don't know if they could tell then, but
yeah, well, this is 1998, so it's not like back in the like 1800s. So
yeah, but I'm I don't know. Could. I feel like DNA.
Oh, it's grown substantially. You know, this isn't. Yeah,
but I guess Law and Order started before Law and Order SVU started before the 1998, and they were using those things. That's how my limit of DNA knowledge.
All of our evidence and everything is based on crime shows. Well, on this crime show, it says you can do this, but no.
I know. I mean, I trust Melinda from Law & Order SVU, so.
Well, we don't have to worry because this, they all decided, was lies, so they did not listen to Brewer. They're like, no, that's bullshit. So they dismissed that as not true. So Barry ended up getting life in prison for his role because they couldn't find anything about a racist past for him. I'll tell you what happens to the other two in a second, but just so you know, because I'm not going to focus a lot on him. Okay. He's actually going to be eligible for parole in 2038. And, you know, we always talk about some of these people and how their time is spent in prison. And I couldn't find a lot, but I do know that he married his sweetheart who he had been dating prior to this while he was in prison. And now they have a child together, which I'm guessing was born while he, like, during his prison, because he's been in prison for 20 some years. Yeah. And I don't think that child was born before that. So my question is he getting conjugal visits? And if he is, I think that is some bullshit.
That is total bullshit.
So, I don't know. I don't like that. When these men were arrested, many in the state, so I know you had a response of like, oh my God, I don't think this is going to have an ending that I want. So a lot of people were, the whole nation was kind of concerned about that because Texas isn't really known for its racial sensitivities a lot of times or, you know, being forward thinking on, on this kind of subject. So because this was two or three white men who killed a black man, that the death penalty wouldn't be even sort of an option. In fact, in Texas, a white man had never gotten the death penalty for killing a black man before. So this had never happened. I mean, I'm not pro death penalty, so, but still, like, you know, I just, it just shows, like, kind of the racist leanings.
But it shows that they're not punishing them equally, yeah, so it's less about, like, the death penalty for me, and more about,
equal
punishment.
It goes same hand in hand with, like, Randy Reeves in Nebraska. It's like, there's not the same punishment fitting the crime here. So when the jury was selected and there were 11 white people on it and one black man, everybody was like, oh shit. Many didn't think that this record of never getting the death penalty for this kind of case would change. However, the first thing that the jury did was nominate this black man as the foreman for the jury.
Yes. Okay. And so we're going in the right direction.
So King and Brewer were both found guilty and both got the death penalty. So this was the first time in Texas history that a white man was on death row for killing a black man.
That's awesome.
Brewer was put to death on September 21st, 2011. Reporters the day before interviewed him, and he was asked if he regretted what he did, and here was his response. As far as regrets, no, I have no regrets. No, I'd do it all over again to tell you the truth. So,
okay, if there's ever an argument for the death penalty, I feel like that might be it.
Yeah, well, and definitely, like, the argument for why he should get life without parole, too, if, you know, that's my more my leanings. But King appealed, proclaiming his innocence the entire time, stating that Barry and he were not there when it happened, and that it had all been Brewer who had done all of this. And then he was saying he didn't get fair counsel, and that his lawyer... because his lawyer didn't even speak, like, didn't even do an opening statement or anything. So he was, like, trying to pull that. However, his appeals didn't work, and he was actually put to death on April 24th, 2019.
So this just happened. Okay. Just happened. See, and that's also my thing, is, like, these men have been in prison since what? When was the trial?
1998. The trial was in 1999, the, like, winter of January 99. But
so... for what, 20
years?
20 years. They sat in prison, like...
on death row.
Oh, my gosh. And then apparently someone got conjugal, but, like...
Yeah, well, he's still there and could have possibility of parole. Although with that, I'm like, okay, life in prison, I'm pretty sure it was his truck and that he was the driver, this... I know. Barry. And I'm like, I don't see how that wasn't as culpable as the other two. I don't care if there wasn't, like, he didn't have flagrant white supremacists in his background. He drove the fucking car while James was being dragged. Like, that, no. You guys are all on the same playing field, in my opinion. Not that I, you know, I'm not for death penalty, but they should have all gotten, I think, the same sentence. So I could have totally shared a number of murders in Texas, but I chose this one for a couple of reasons. First is, we always talk about the strength of families of victims, and the Byrd family is right up there with the best and the strongest of them, in my opinion. So James's daughter, Renee, is currently a police officer in Houston, Texas. She actually, with the George Floyd and all of the race issues coming out right now, she just did an interview a couple days ago for one of the Texas news stations, so I'll link it on our blog. Yeah, so she was talking about when, after it first happened, how she just had a lot of hatred inside of her and it could have just turned into no good, but she wanted to do something that would change the world. And so she decided to become a police officer to help make those changes occur. And she knew that her father would really want that of her. So she didn't wallow in her hate, and she decided she wanted to actively become a part of change in this country. So right now, that's what she's trying to do. She's been marching in Houston with Black Lives Matter. She's very vocal. So I think her dad would be very proud of her. And then the rest of the Byrd family. So his sisters started the James Byrd Foundation for Racial Healing, which dedicates its time and efforts to providing public enlightenment and education in matters regarding cultural diversity and historical research, to preserve and maintain and operate a facility in Jasper, Texas, as a center for encouragement and racial healing through education, to heighten the awareness to the consequences of racial hatred and hopefully reduce the number of racially motivated crimes. So, like, those are their main goals. So it's still a foundation that's going on right now. And they were also key in getting Barack Obama to sign the Matthew Shepard, James Byrd Jr. Act for hate crimes in 2010. So many of you know Matthew Shepard was from Idaho, and he was a gay man who was brutally beaten by two gentlemen. I don't even remember their names, and they don't need to be remembered for their homophobic piece of shit lives. So their two families really work to get this legislation passed. The second reason why I wanted to share this story is currently right now, there is an anti-lynching bill that is sitting on the Senate floor. So it is sponsored by Cory Booker, Kamala Harris, and a Republican, Tim Scott. So it's a bipartisan bill. A Republican is one of the ones. So currently this bill has been halted by Rand Paul.
I hate that guy.
So this bill would make lynching a federal crime, which it currently is not.
Which is beyond me right now.
Yes. So there is another lynching bill that had passed in 2019, but the one going on right now is more stringent and making it a federal crime. And just wanted to shout out the four pieces of shit senators that voted no on the lynching bill. So Louis Gohmert, I don't know if you how you pronounce that. He's from Texas, so fuck you. Thomas Massie of Kentucky, fuck you. Ted Yoho or Yoohoo, not sure, of Florida, fuck you. And Justin Amish of Michigan, fuck you. Just wanted to shout out those four names of representatives who aren't against lynching.
Yes, and if you live in one of those states, remember to register to vote.
Yeah, so this was called the Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act. Mm-hmm. So just wanted to point that out. So right now, the current one, and there I actually just read, so in the San Francisco Gate newspaper, they just put out an article. Today is June 23rd that we're recording this on the bill being stalled in the Senate. This bill is tied to another bill that the Democrats are trying to pass, which includes a ban on no-knock warrants and prohibits chokeholds that cut off somebody's air. So like how George Floyd died, and have higher standards for police to authorize the use of force. So that the reason why Rand Paul is halting this bill is because it's tied to this other legislation. So we have opportunities to have our voices heard and let them know that we want these kind of bills to be passed. So I just think that's really important because it's happening right now as we speak. And then the last reason why I chose to talk about this story, and it's something we've brought up before, is prisons and reforming and what prisons do and turn people into when they're there. So if you remember when I talked, King and Brewer, King, his father says he was not raised to hate the way he came out of prison. He was not that kind of person until he went into prison. Many say Brewer was the same way. I don't know if that's true or not, but if it is, it was apparently pretty well known that the prison that they were at, that prison guards like to pit the races against each other, encouraging fighting and kind of racist activity. So that's my huge issue with prisons, because if this turned these, what it turns people into, there is no reform. It's a place that people tend not to come out better than they were. So what's the point? It just is really frustrating.
And again, going back to, and I think you're right, we did talk about this, is the fact that our prison system needs to be reformed towards more of a rehabilitation. Because if you're just, that's the thing is, there's, we can go on forever about the prison system, but when you lock people up to basically enslave them because they're now cheap labor, 13th Amendment, look it up, then you're not really looking to make them better because you want them to keep reoffending. You want them to come back in. You want that three strikes, you're out type thing. And you want them in there for a long time. Is three strikes, you're out still a thing? It is, right?
It is some places. Yeah. California reversed it like a couple years ago, I believe. But there is a lot of, I know a number of states have that.
Okay. Yeah. And so we have to look at those things that happened in the past and take with like, okay, what were the motivations behind these prison choices? The fact that prisons are privatized in the first place is ridiculous. Like, there's so many things that need to change in there. But when you have all those outside factors like cheap labor and profits, basically prisons for profits, you're not going to ever... you're never going to get them to be the rehabilitation centers that they need to be. And then let alone the whole, like, in quotes, war on drugs and how we lock people up for the tiniest little, like, it was the Andrew Sadak case that we were talking about. They were trying to threaten him with this crazy sentence of what was it, like 20 years, $20,000? Yeah, but it
was like there was multiple long prison years for him.
Charges. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Just because he had tiny amounts of pot on him. And can you imagine, like, we know that he like never would have gotten that, but can you imagine if he for sure would have gotten that sentence. And that's where we run into those issues with the prison system, because you send someone in for such a tiny infraction, what are you going to get out? Because they do, in a lot of prisons, they have to form cliques and they have to.
Yeah. Find people, it's that survival. So, So Jasper, Texas kind of doesn't, I mean, this isn't necessarily something that a town wants to be known for. So that's kind of been a struggle. And I just thought I would look to see, because Jasper, Texas is predominantly, it's like 60% African American. And so I just went onto their city website and just took a gander at who is working. So up in the head, so mayor, city council, all of that. And I did not, I think there is one Black person in any role there.
Wow.
It's otherwise it's all white. And like, there's only like 30% of the population is white in that city. And so there's just a real disparity when it comes to that and whose voice gets heard. And I really have an issue with that. And I know in the last mayoral election, it was the current mayor, I think his last name's Gatlin, was running against African-American and he got voted in. So that makes me just kind of, maybe he's great. I don't know. I, you know, didn't witness, maybe he's a really good mayor and he fights for equality and justice, but it just makes me really question, because I'm like, what are the chances that 60% African-Americans would vote this elderly white man into a mayor office? And so I just, you know, and all the judges are white. You know, one city council member being Black is does not show. But I mean, we have that same issue in Fresno too. So I think that that's a commonality all over the United States that needs to change.
Yeah, and that, like I said, we can go on forever about the issues in in our country. But I think that's a huge thing, is that people feel that they can't vote, or that their vote doesn't matter, or their vote doesn't mean anything. Not to go off on too much of a side tangent, but I did watch, there's a show called The Patriot Act with Hasan Minhaj from The Daily Show. Do you remember him? He has his own show where he talks about that kind of stuff. And he actually he did an episode this past weekend about what's wrong with our voting system and the fact that we have a winner take all system, and the fact that we have this type of like, it, you don't have to get, what is it called? It's not majority voting. It's something else. It's called something else. But basically, you don't have to get the most votes. You just have to get more votes than the other people. Whereas I believe it was in Maine, they said instituted that majority rules. So they have, it's a ranking system to where you look at your candidates and you say, okay, this is my first choice, this is my second choice, this is my third choice, and you list the order that you're okay with. And then they take the top couple, they just keep narrowing it down basically. So you take, then you take the top two and like you look at, okay, who had the more first choices, second choices, and that bumps you up. So it's a ranking system. So it truly is a majority rule. Yeah. Like, oh, okay, my first choice got bumped out, but this would be my second choice. So all those people that their choices got bumped out, their second choices now get the votes. And if their second choice was bumped out, then their third choice gets the vote until somebody has
majority.
A majority. So even too, like he showed a political ad for, I don't remember if it was a governor of Maine or if it was like a congressperson. I can't remember what the role was, but it was both of the candidates were there and they're like, hey, like, mark him number one and then me number two. And the guy was like, or mark her number one and me number two. And just, and so they were working together, to make sure that, hey, put us together as your one or two, whatever order, doesn't matter, because then you can guarantee someone progressive in this spot, or somebody that has your beliefs in mind, or your best interests in mind, at least. Which I thought was like, holy shit, how do we not vote like this? Like,
yeah.
Well, that is such a better way of voting.
Yeah. And it's bullshit that, you know, we have the Electoral College. So a person that doesn't even have the majority of the votes still wins. Like, mm-hmm. that seems totally asinine. That it just makes no sense to me.
It doesn't. And I've always had issues with the Electoral College. And I feel like what we're doing now is not what the Founding Fathers had in mind.
No.
When they wrote the Constitution. Like, they didn't want a two-party system. Like,
yeah.
that was not at all something that they wanted. It's something that developed over time, because two parties ended up getting a lot of backing from stuff, and then money got involved and all of these things, and now we have the mess that we have now.
Yep.
But I think at this point, with so many branches, like, you even have the Democratic Party splitting into two branches. You have, like, the really progressive Democrats, and then you have mm-hmm. the more moderate Democrats. And even yeah. in the Republican Party, I think right now, even though it's not as clear of a cut, mm-hmm. there is some, because
yeah.
now oh, you have the crazy conservative, like, real hardcore
yes.
ones, and then you have the more moderate, where, like, certain things. So even they're branching off into different parties. And so I think if we had some type of ranking system, we'd end up so much better. So I need to figure out how to get stuff on ballots, because that should be a thing that we
I know pass. I feel like California has 752 bonds every freaking I know. year.
So however we can figure that yeah. out, let's do that, because you would think that California or New York and these more liberal states would have these kinds of voting systems, because they're more democratic, I feel like,
than yeah
yeah anything that we have right now. Okay, sorry, went off on a side nope. tangent there
about it happens system,
but
all right, hold on,
we'll see if it makes it into the episode.
Yeah. All right, you want to tell me what your story is today?
Yeah, okay, so my story isn't super long. Surprise, surprise. I feel like my stories are always not that long. But I think it goes to the fact that I don't want to waste a whole lot of time on the perpetrators of yep. these crimes, because I feel like they don't deserve to be remembered or honored. This is about the victims of these crimes and mm-hmm. getting their name out so we don't forget. So my story is about Jose Campos Torres. Jose, or Joe, was what he went by, was born in Houston, Texas on December 20th, 1953. He grew up in a poor neighborhood and only ended up going to school through eighth grade, but he did have dreams. He wanted to own and run his own karate school. He really enjoyed working out. He loved karate. He was working up that belt system that they have up to get to be a black belt, I believe is the highest one. And so he really wanted to bring these self-defense karate classes to his East End neighborhood. He knew he needed some more education, though, because, like I said, he only had an eighth grade education. So as he got older, he joined the Army and served in Vietnam. And they say join the Army. They didn't go too much into it, but I'm wondering if he more got drafted.
Drafted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know how voluntary it was.
Okay.
But he was in the Army. He served in Vietnam. But again, I couldn't find really where he was stationed. He's just a Vietnam vet. They didn't say anything more about his time. He eventually found himself accepted into the Army Ranger program, though, at Fort Bragg. But during his Ranger training, he was discharged from the U.S. Army on a general discharge. Friends of Joe remember him trying to find himself and struggling with alcoholism throughout his life. And when he would become intoxicated, he would become aggressive. He would pick fights. He would bust out his karate moves on everybody, like randomly kicking and punching and all that kind of stuff. So it was reported that his alcoholism and his aggressive outbursts were what led to the discharge from the Army. Mm. Yeah. After his discharge, Joe's brother said that he changed. He started cutting down on his drinking and was trying to get a job, because remember, he still had that dream of opening the karate studio. So he needed his GED, a driver's license, and mm-hmm. he needed to make the money. So he struggled to get a job after his discharge, because he resented a lot of the jobs he was qualified to do. So even though in the Army he had some training, and he had, I believe, some experience in like telecommunication type stuff during his time in the Army, when he applied for telecommunication jobs here in the States, they were saying that he wasn't qualified because he didn't have his GED or a driver's license. So he started working on getting those things. April of 1977, Joe finally found employment as a glass contractor, where he could earn $2.75 an hour, about 50 cents over the minimum wage, if Google had its facts right. So I looked it up, which, holy crap, that's a really small minimum wage. But hey, which in today's rates, though, would be about $11.50 an hour. So not terribly bad. But again,
when I started working, I think minimum wage was like $5.25 an hour in Nebraska. So that was 1997. I guess that was a long time. Damn it.
No, when I got my job at Target, they paid me $9.10 an hour, and that was just the barely above minimum wage. So that was like a little bit more than minimum wage.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's gone up too much. Well, now they're trying to get it to $15 an hour. So this it's pretty good in today's rates.
Yes. I would say. Yeah.
So Joe had been struggling with his alcoholism again. And on May 5th, 1977, Joe was arrested for disorderly conduct at a bar in Houston's East End. Because his dad and his brothers, because I read a newspaper article and they were saying that it was one of his lapses. Like, he had been doing good, not drinking a lot, but he got pretty intoxicated. And remember, he likes to fight when that happens. Mm-hmm. So he got in a fight with, I believe, the bar owner. And so he called the cops, and then the cops showed up. He reportedly had a blood alcohol content that was more than two times as high as the 0.1% required to convict someone of drunk driving. Remember, he doesn't have a license. He wasn't driving, but still, that's just to give a reference of where they should be. So he was pretty drunk. After he was arrested, police took him to a spot known as The Hole near the Buffalo Bayou. So The Hole is basically a spot where cops can get together and relax. Not even get together. It's not like they hang out there, but like if one of them needs to like eat, or they need to stretch their legs, or like take off their holster for a little bit, this is the spot they go. It's secluded. It's away from where anybody could see them, or where people could sneak up on them or whatever. So they just go to chill. And apparently these things are in lots of cities, but this one was known as The Hole.
Okay.
I don't know. So at The Hole, they beat Joe so severely that the officers at the city jail, when they took him finally, refused to book him. He had bruises on the right side of his head and abdomen, as well as bruises on his right hand and both shins. So they beat the hell out of him.
Yeah.
It says they're not sure, though, if any of these came from the fight beforehand. And I couldn't find anything that said it. But it sounded like the bar owner called the cops pretty quick. So I don't know. And they didn't charge him with any type of assault. It was just disorderly conduct. So he might have been getting loud or threatening the fight, whatever. Either way, there's no way to know. So supervisors at the city jail instead told the officers to take Joe to the local hospital called Ben Taub. So the five officers instead took Joe back to the Buffalo Bayou and pushed him into the water while he was handcuffed, saying, "Let's see if the wetback can swim."
Oh, God.
I know. Also, five police officers for one dude? Like, really?
Yeah, no need. Yeah, one dude that's handcuffed that they're just taking to get medical care.
I know. Why are there so many? 3 days later, on May 8th, which is Mother's Day, Joe's body was found beaten and floating in the bayou. Two of the arresting officers, Terry Denson and Stephen Orlando, were charged with murder after the body was discovered. Three other officers involved in the incident were fired, but were never charged.
So what did they say had happened to him when they didn't take him to the hospital or come back with him or whatever? Nothing? They're just like, oh, people will forget?
It never said how they covered. And like I said, I didn't look too much into the men, but
yeah.
I mean, they easily could have just been like, oh yeah, we left him at the hospital. Cause why would the cops like call a hospital and be like, oh, did they really drop this guy off? You know what I mean? So, and then it was only a few days later that they found him. Cause it says it was on May 8th and he was arrested late on May 5th. So easily could have been like 1 or 2 days. Cause he was found, I believe, in the morning on May 8th. And I'm going to say dumped in the bayou probably on May 6th. So it wasn't too much time. And then that was kind of frustrating as well, that the three other officers who were involved in the incident were just fired, which we are 100% seeing.
Are for the course.
Still, yeah, going on is that the people that just stand by and let this happen aren't being held accountable.
Even the fact that they were fired is almost progressive in today's day and age.
I know. Get your shit together, Texas. So Denson and Orlando were convicted and found guilty of negligent homicide. Negligent homicide is a misdemeanor charge. Like, that's just basically saying they accidentally killed him. Oops. It wasn't on purpose. When, by just the simple fact that he was handcuffed and they pushed him in the water after beating him, that's first-degree murder. They planned to watch him die in there. In addition to their misdemeanor charge, they were sentenced to 1 year probation and they were charged a $1 fine.
$1
is what those cops had to pay for murdering him. Unsurprisingly, these sentences led to community outrage. 1 year after Joe's murder. So there were, I know I'm jumping a little bit because I want to talk about what happened on the 1 year anniversary, but there were protests throughout. There was a group that was put together to protest police brutality in Houston. And there was a lot of community outrage by this event and throughout that whole year. So 1 year after Joe's murder, a riot broke out in Moody Park, which is in Houston's Near North Side neighborhood. And this was during Cinco de Mayo was when he died. Mm-hmm. So at 7:30 p.m., just after a Cinco de Mayo fiesta that had around 5,000 to 6,000 people in attendance had ended, police were called for an incident of disorderly conduct, which I looked and the only place that I found that said what it was basically this guy got in a fight with another guy because he tried to hit on his girlfriend or his sister. I can't remember which one they said. Either way, it was some drunk dudes who got in a fight. So that was the disorderly conduct. So, and remember, this event is ending, so there are a lot of people, like, dispersing and leaving. Mm-hmm. It's unclear how the riot started, but some say that officers began arresting people, and others begin yelling things like, you're not taking them, you'll kill them the way you killed Jose, justice for Joe Torres, viva Joe Torres, and a Chicano's life is worth more than a dollar. So things got real escalated real quickly when they started arresting people. That's the only thing I saw that said that how it all started, but I really just think it was a mix of just the police being there and there being some alcohol and some other things going on. Like, it's just a heightened thing.
Yeah.
So soon after the chants began, rocks and bottles begin to fly towards the officers. Stores in the Fulton Village shopping center nearby were looted and set ablaze. One of the store owners even said it took firefighters an hour to respond to his 911 call. Fellow store owners were upset, saying that the officers took their time responding and addressing the riot. So people were pissed. Like, even the store owners were pissed off at the police at this point. So the rioting spread out over a 10-block area near Moody Park, with a total of 6 stores and a gas station going up in flames. Which, if a gas station went up, I'm really surprised more buildings did not go up.
Yeah, no kidding.
They must not have been very close. So, like I said, people were pretty upset about this because the officers were there and showed up. Everything was a little crazy and out of control. So the officers took a step back and did like a little command post thing while things are on fire and while things are going crazy. They were just trying to figure out what to do. So I could understand a lot of the store owners being super pissed because they're like, if you had just done something, my building would still be up. Because a lot of them at that time, they didn't have insurance. So basically their whole livelihood was just gone. So officers eventually descended on the area in riot gear, because that always calms everybody right down, to try and control the crowd. police claim there were about 1,500 people, but other estimates say it was closer to 150 people to 300 people. So significantly less people than they're saying. And they actually had an old clip from a news station in Houston that I was able to watch on the coverage of these riots. It really didn't look like there were, I don't know how big the park is, and maybe things were spread out by that time, but based on the camera footage, I would say the estimate would be closer to the 150 to 300 range. And maybe the police are making it seem like a whole lot more to justify the fact that they kind of held off on confronting.
Yeah.
So a police officer, so during all the riots and after they were there trying to arrest people, a police officer was struck by a car and broke his leg. And you actually see it on the video, like the news people are filming it and you see him get clipped by the car. And I was
sorry,
like,
oh, it's not funny, but
it's not. It was, but you just watch him go, like the news reporters are there and you just watch him go, poof! And you're like, what the hell just happened? And then all of a sudden he's just like on the ground, like rolling around. But yeah, so it's not funny, but he broke his leg. Two news reporters were hit with bricks as well as stabbed in the back and sent to the hospital, but all of them ended up living. Nobody died as a result of any of this. After this, officers were fearful of cars driving by and stopped many drivers with guns drawn, which they also had video of. People were just driving through this park or like out of the neighborhood. It was dark and obviously the cameras
so not the greatest.
Great. So you couldn't really tell where they were, but like, they just pulled over this guy and there's like seven cops with their guns drawn on him. And he's just like, what the hell is happening? So definitely in a fearful response that was happening. So luckily nobody was killed.
Yeah. It's actually pretty amazing.
Yeah. So one officer had his car set on fire after he had parked it. And then a few more also went up. It didn't say whether they were police cars or just cars that were there. As firefighters responded to the fires, shots were fired from a rifle, which slowed their progress. And there is also video of that as well, where you hear you hear the rifle shot and the firefighters duck down and then they start yelling at the news crews who are still filming. They're like, turn the light off because they don't want to be seen. And so you just hear them shouting at the news crew. Because yes, if someone is shooting at you, don't light up their target. Eventually, the firefighters were able to go out, but it said that they had to bring in so much more police protection, and the firefighters were like, we're not going out there unless there's more people guarding and protecting us.
Yeah.
Around 3 a.m., the riots dispersed and fires had stopped. In the end, 29 people were arrested, four officers, and the two news reporters were injured. I did read another article that said, because this was from the news report, but I think one of the articles later on mentioned that there were a lot more injured, but I think that was they discovered it after the fact.
Okay.
Because the news reporters were there that night, and then they had footage from the next day when they were talking to the store owners. The mayor claims that it showed a great deal of restraint from the officers to not, quote, mop up, but I don't know what mop up meant. My guess is that it, like, to not kill people?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Probably nothing know good.
No. But yeah, so the mayor was happy about it and people were fearful that there were going to be more riots, but there weren't any, especially too after the community, I think had to do a lot with the community speaking out, saying, look, like, this is our community. We had nothing to do with this. We're upset about everything, too. Mm-hmm. Why are you destroying our livelihood and our area and making us fearful? Like, if you're mad at the cops, go mess up their territory. Like, go mess up the police station or whatever. So there weren't any more riots after that. But it was something that they did talk to the leader of, his name's Morales. They talked to him. He was the leader of that group that was fighting police brutality. They had a really long name. I didn't write it down. But they basically tried to blame them for it, saying that they kind of incited it because they were at the park at the fiesta, passing out like information and stuff about police brutality. And I'm like, just because you're making people aware of police brutality does not mean you're condoning riots.
No.
And I don't think any of his group was anyone that was arrested or anything like that. So it was a stretch for them. But Joe Torres's sister, She was really young when he died, but as she got older, she, like we were talking about with that resiliency, she turned that hate into something more positive. So they did end up starting a walk for him, like an annual thing. I don't know if they did it last year. The articles I said were talking about it in 2016 and 2017.
Mm-hmm.
But they did. They started a walk for him just to remember him and talk about all the police brutality that takes place in Houston, because despite it being a very large Hispanic population, there is an insane amount of police brutality and things like this happening where people are getting arrested or hurt. And so much so that the mayor talks about how much restraint the police showed, which in my opinion is just how they should be doing their job.
Yes.
Anyway, is like, yeah, not murdering people. Even if people are rioting, that doesn't give you the right to murder them. Yes, arrest them and lock them. Like, because they caught the guy who hit the cop with his car. They caught him right after, and thankfully, like, they didn't murder him. He got arrested and charged, like, which is how the process should go.
Yeah.
And because he did commit a crime, like, you shouldn't run people over with cars. And yeah, so he ended up facing his charges. But I know it was a relatively short story, but I wanted to share because it does still talk about the police brutality. And I know mine was a little further back than yours, but just the fact that this was in the 1970, I think. Yes, 1977 was in the 70s, which is still a ways back. And still definitely the fact that this happened in 1977 and we're still having to protest police brutality today in 2020 is ridiculous. And also too, I did want to share. So like I said, I read a news article from the Houston Chronicle that I believe it was the week after everything happened. And so it had a joint article on Terry Denson and Joe Torres. And so it had their pictures side by side, and Torres's picture is always him, his picture from the army. And Denson is just a picture of him. He's just a dude with a mustache. And I don't know how else to describe him. So the headline, I did want to read the little taglines because the headline is kind of just their names. It's like Denson, Torres. But underneath for Torres, it said, friends say he had his dreams, .. and his drawbacks. And Denson, family and friends of accused officers say he's a nice guy. And I was reading the article on Joe Torres is where I got a lot of my information because he was talking to his family and talking about all of those things he wanted to do. And I also read Denson's article, which basically talked about he was a Marine in the same war that Torres was. And he grew up, had a relatively uneventful life, and he was just a nice guy who worked hard, and the girls at school considered him a brother type, and they had all grown up together. He was always a good boy. He was never outgoing. And just the fact that they chose to focus on those aspects of him, even though he pushed a man handcuffed into the bayou, they talked to all the people in his life like, oh, look at his above average IQ, and they talked to his principal, and they talked to classmates, and they talked to this. Whereas Joe Torres, like, they were telling the truth about him, right? Like, he struggled, but that didn't mean anything. Like, he was trying to get his life together. He was doing what he could. And it was just upsetting to see that that's what they...
Yeah, because he's the victim in all of this, you know?
Yeah.
But that just goes to show, like, there is journalist bias, like, when it comes to that kind of thing, and you look at a lot of newspaper articles, there's definitely a racial bias when it comes to reporting that people aren't always even really aware of until, like, you really open your eyes and you're like, oh, wow. And so I know you and I had a training on that once.
Yeah,
and they showed where they different- had a... all these different articles, and you know, and it had a black guy walking by a broken window, and it was like accusing him of rioting, and then there was the white lady actually carrying and stealing stuff, and it didn't say anything about her rioting.
It was after the hurricane, whenever they showed the black people, they were looting the stores. Yes. But whenever they showed the white people with bread and water, they were just getting that they're fighting to survive. They're getting supplies.
By taking them and not paying and for them.
And it's like they're doing the same shit.
So that definitely happens, and it's terrible. And the fact that they focus that on that, and then, yeah, like the murderer. Yeah, like okay. He was a great guy. No, he was apparently a racist murderer.
Yeah, because I believe it was him and Orlando who must have been the officers who like I said, it didn't go too much into who did what, because
yeah,
I mean, we'll never really know, but I'm gonna assume because they got the actual charges and like the negligent homicide and the other officers didn't, that they must have been the ringleaders of the thing, which means that they were the ones who pushed him in the water. And it was just a really heartbreaking thing to see that they both got the same amount of column space, whereas Joe's was talking about his alcoholism and really focused on the struggles that he had. And I mean, and granted, it was coming from his family, but I'd be interested to know in how much of the interview did they say other things? And did they say these really great things about him and the newspaper didn't print it? And I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I have no idea, but it just seems like you couldn't find a few people to tell us like what a great guy he was. And I mean, obviously he served his country and he did all of these things, and he was driven. Yeah, he had some issues, but he grew up in poverty. Like the fact that he had those dreams in the first place and was really trying to make them happen is a great thing. And whereas the officer's article barely had anything about the events that took place and was more just like talking to his vice principal and talking to friends at school and look what a great guy he was, and oh, he had an above average IQ, and it's like, it doesn't matter if you're smart or not.
A lot of sociopaths have a high IQ, and look at them.
And it's not saying that people with book smarts or some semblance of like brain capability can't also be racist and can't also be assholes. Like, people can be bigoted and not be like the stereotypical like white trash Confederate flag flying racist that you picture. Could be anybody. And so I just thought it was really unfortunate. In this one, I know last time we were talking about the Tulsa race massacre versus them calling it a riot. This one actually was a riot, so I'm gonna call it like I see it. I mean, they burnt cars and looted. It wasn't a protest that people were calling a riot. It wasn't them defending anything. But I think it shows where the community's at and where that they, you push people hard enough and they're going to feel like they have no other option.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I couldn't find anything else on Denson and Orlando to see what happened. My guess is they lived great fucking lives or are still living okay lives, because they had their $1 fine and their year of probation.
So definitely justice was not served in your case. At least in my case, there was some justice for the family. In your case, not so much, but you know, even having 40 years later, there was a walk in his memory. So, so people are thinking about him, and hopefully they're not thinking about those two guys, other guy, the two murderers.
Yeah. And it's like, again, we talk about just a family's perseverance, you know, like they didn't let it bring him down. His sister, even though she was too young to really understand, she still got it. And then just in case anybody wanted to know, it's called the Joe Campos Torres Solidarity Walk in Houston. And the, as far as I know, they continue to do stuff. It looks like on their Facebook page, they also support other situations of police brutality, and they post things like that so that way those people can also not be forgotten. And it, they're really standing with the George Floyd protests as well. Because I mean, okay, it looks like they're doing a drive, the fifth annual Joe Campos Torres Solidarity Drive on May 2nd, or they did it on May 2nd.
Okay,
so they did,
I was gonna say, everything everything this year is just off. So, you know, it's like 2020 is not the norm. So,
So they did that, but they also do, they have like conferences and all kinds of stuff and street art, all kinds of different things. So they're really involved. And I think that's really great that even though they couldn't have the solidarity walk that because of COVID, they had a drive in his honor. But yeah, but just again, police brutality affects us all, and we need to do something about it.
Absolutely. So pass the bill I was talking about. So speak up. So it went, look, our stories go hand in hand yet again.
They do. And I have a feeling that they might go hand in hand. Because again, there were plenty of stories we could have talked about in Texas, but I think, and I mean, hopefully with the amount of people who listen to this podcast, we can keep going after we reach all of the states. We'll backtrack and hit some of the states again and share those. But I think right now with everything going on, these are the cases that.
Yeah. And the people's stories that need to be remembered and told again, so that mm-hmm. we realize history does keep on repeating itself, and we need to make change, like real systemic changes.
Yeah, that this is happening in the 70s. It happened in your story was in the 90s. It's happening mm-hmm. today. I mean,
it happened in the 20s. It happened. Yeah.
I'm sure, I mean, Texas wasn't exactly the not slave owning state.
So no.
A lot of these things they're in our history, and we need to correct them. Or yes. Not correct them, but we need to learn from
them. Fix them. Yeah, learn from them and change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Well, thank you for sharing his Joe Torres' story with us.
Yeah. So now it's time for our super fun state facts.
And cities.
So do you want to start with your city, or do you want me to start with mine? I think I started my city last time, so why don't you go ahead?
All right, I will start my city. So yet again, I like to, I like to pick the small towns, so... This is a common occurrence. I need to stop it. So, but I thought I would share. So mine happened in Jasper, Texas. So Jasper County, and the largest lake in Texas is actually right by Jasper, Texas. And it's called Lake Sam Rayburn. And I just wanted to share, in case you guys really, really enjoy fishing, I do not, but if you do, it was labeled the number one bass fishing lake in the United States.
Wow.
So if you like bass fish and bass fishing, you should head over to Lake Sam Rayburn in Jasper County, Texas, because apparently it's amazing.
Nice.
So that was really, there's a lot of information on Lake Sam Rayburn. Otherwise, there wasn't a lot on Jasper, Texas. So that's what I'm thinking. Best bass lake, bass lake in the United States. Woohoo!
There you go.
Way to go, Jasper.
Yeah. Okay, so mine took place in Houston, and there were a lot of facts, but something that I thought was really cool was in downtown Houston, they have an underground system of tunnels, and they're like pedestrian tunnels, so you could like walk in them. So the system of tunnels is 20 feet below Houston's downtown streets and more than 6 miles long. Having started out as they were the tunnel between two downtown movie theaters, it includes restaurants, service, retail, and connects 95 city blocks. Entry points are from like some stairs, escalators, or elevators inside buildings. And there is a map of these underground tunnels, and it is crazy. So there's like I said, it connects a lot of stuff, and people will walk around, and there's even the tunnels will connect you to different things. So like shopping or theater or the ballpark. And I guess you just cruise down these tunnels, and there's like a whole map of like everything that they connect to and the different colors. And I'll send this to Amber, and you can put it on the blog. So that way.
I wonder if when they had the flood a couple years ago, was it all flooded?
I don't know, actually. I did not. That would be interesting, though.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think that they would.
I would have thought probably they would, too, because a lot of Houston was flooded. So
But, I mean, they're up and running now. So,
Well, they've been fixed then.
But yeah, but I don't know. Most of Houston was flooded, right? I don't maybe downtown.
I don't know a lot
did.
About Houston.
Yeah, I don't either. So if you know, let us know. Did the underground tunnels flood? Because yeah, they're just private companies added to the tunnels, and now it's like this huge.
That's thing. Pretty cool.
But it was actually it was inspired by the passageways beneath Rockefeller Center. And the tunnels actually had like a penny arcade at one point, shops, they had a wine tavern, because they were built in like 1935, so they're pretty old. But yeah, but that was my fun fact for Houston. I thought that was pretty cool, and if I ever go to Texas, then I'll check it out.
Yeah, if you go to Houston, Texas is pretty big. So specifically, yeah. If you go to Houston.
Specifically, okay. If I go to Houston.
So I have the state fact, and you know I always like to give little facts that pertain to me if there's a state. And so my favorite soda or pop or soda pop or Coke, whatever you call it, I used to call it pop, but now I call it soda because it's not acceptable around here to call it pop.
No, who calls all soda Coke though? Are there places that
that's
do
a
that?
Southern. Yeah, that's a Southern thing.
Coke is Coke, and other sodas are other sodas.
7-Up. Yeah. So anyway, but Texas invented my favorite, which is Dr. Pepper. So shout out Texas.
Dr. Pepper.
I love Dr. Pepper. So thank you, Texas, for giving me Dr. Pepper, even though it's not good for me.
Have you ever drank Dr. Pepper with like licorice? So like if you take a Red Vine, I don't know if you like licorice, but
I do.
In elementary school, we used to take Red Vines, and if you bite the ends off the Red Vine, it's like a little straw, right? So you stick it in your Dr. Pepper, and it's so good. Because you know how Dr. Pepper has kind of that interesting, like, sweet taste? I don't know. The Red Vines work with it. I like
it. I'll have to try that. I do love Red Vines, I do love Dr. Pepper.
There's a weird fun fact about things I used to do in elementary school.
So, yep, there we go. Okay, but my real actual interesting fact about Texas is that Texas uses its own power grid separate from the rest of the United States. So I didn't know this, so I thought this was kind of interesting. So there are 3 power grids in the United States, one for the states east of the Rocky Mountains, and one for the states like on the Pacific side, so our area, and then one for just Texas. And the reason for that was during World War II, there were so many Texas factories producing critical war supplies that they needed to be self-sustainable if anything happened. Mm-hmm. And so they built their own power grid.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
I know. So interesting, Texas. I thought maybe it was just because it was such a big state, but nope.
Nope. I know. Is Texas bigger than California?
I think area-wise, I don't think...
Because I don't know area-wise, because it's hard to tell because we're obviously different shapes, but...
Yeah. Because we're different shapes.
If you cut up California, could it fit in Texas?
I would think so. Texas is pretty big.
Yeah, because I feel like California and Texas are probably the biggest state.
Oh, here, Texas is only second to Alaska's land mass, and Texas is also larger than any country in Europe.
That doesn't surprise me. Europe is, all of them are made up of little smaller countries.
Yeah. And Texas also is the 7th biggest producer of greenhouse gas emissions.
That's not
a positive fact.
No, but it also doesn't surprise me. Oh, no. And that was the other thing. When I looked up Houston, is that more people eat out in Houston than anywhere else. Like they have the population that eats out the most. Because they have such a diverse, like, restaurant business. Like, they have such a diverse community there that there's so many different restaurants. And it's only, it's third to, not including, like, LA and I think New York City in terms of how many different languages are spoken. And so, yeah, it's a lot of different languages spoken in Houston. The same way that LA and New York, I think it was New York City, they said.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure New York probably has the most languages spoken.
Oh, yeah.
At least in the United States. Mm-hmm. Fresno has a few, too.
It does. I think a lot of California does, but LA for sure has a whole mess of different languages. Definitely a very diverse community there. But yeah, so that was our episode on Texas.
Tejas.
Yeah, I like how both of our stories were kind of short. Mine was pretty short. So even though everything's bigger in Texas, our episode is not.
Although we did go on a lot of tangents of what our belief systems are. So who knows how long this episode's going to be.
We'll see.
Never know.
If the episode is longer, then I'll cut that part out. But if it's short, then I'm totally going to put the everything's bigger in Texas except
everything's
this episode.
Everything's bigger in Texas. So, yeah, and shout out to one of my best college friends, Lopez. He's been waiting for this episode. So
there you go. Here it is. Hope you enjoyed it.
I miss you, buddy. Hope you enjoyed it. And he didn't give me I asked him for like a case, and he's like, no, I want to learn from you. I don't want to give you anyone. And I'm like, get out of here.
All right. Well, hopefully you learned something today.
Hopefully.
And hopefully this was a good episode for Texas. Hopefully we did Texas proud. Although I don't think Texas wants us talking about racism or police brutality, but that's just, I don't know.
Whatever.
We'll see. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys so much for listening throughout this whole time. So this is awesome. We're on episode
16,
17. I don't know. I think 16. I think I'm going to go 16. We'll see. See
if you guys. I think it's 17.
We'll see.
Because Nebraska was 14 and then 3. 17, Amber's maybe. Right.
Numbers are not my strong suit. So thank you guys for sticking with us all this time. Remember, if you want some bonus content after the episodes, whether it's pictures from Amber's South Dakota vacations or her 16th birthday vacation pictures or some information on, I think it was back in our, what was it, Idaho episode, we did the ugliest flag.
Yeah.
We have just tons of bonus stuff for you guys in the blog, so check it out at www.stateofmurder.com. If you have any suggestions, want to say hi, anything like that, then email us at stateofmurderpodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to like and follow us on Facebook and Instagram so that way you can stay up to date and things that happen, like our episode switch that happened last week. And yeah, I think that's everything.
I feel like everything. But you're always so good at that, and I'm so terrible at that, so I appreciate it.
The reason I'm so good at closing type stuff is because I used to do the closing announcement when I worked at Target. So I had the whole little like wrap it all up.
So, get out of our store.
Yep. That was basically my thing. And if I was done and there were people still in the store, because I would have to walk around and collect everybody's like walkies because they were plugged in behind the operator's desk. And so I would walk around and I would just like mean mug people as I was walking around collecting.
Ooh, and Selena like, has them. The best like mean eyes. Like she will cut you down to size with her mean look.
Well, I gave you, because we would give the announcement 30 minutes, 15 minutes, 10 minutes, 5 minutes, and the store is fucking closed. Get the hell out. And if you are still in there, like, no, I want to go home. Get the fuck out of this.
Yeah. Oh, my favorite part when I worked at Starbucks was kicking people out when we closed. I was like, bye, really get out. We're closed. Yeah. Get out of here.
So I would look at them and be like, the store is closed. You need to head up to the front. It's time to go because I want to go home. Yeah. Yep. Oh, but
all right, another tangent, but thank you guys.
Sorry, guys. That probably won't make it into the episode. But thank you guys and have a good night.
See you next week.
Good morning. Good day. Whenever.
I don't know. I think, and next week, I think we're going to, if my state geography is correct, Arkansas.
I thought Arkansas was further north. I don't think it's Arkansas. Let me look it up. I think Arkansas. That's too high up.
No, it's not. It's right by Oklahoma.
Louisiana.
Louisiana, dang it.
Arkansas is not on the ocean.
Whatever. I don't know. So, I told you I didn't know my state geography. We're getting into states I haven't been to, so I don't care.
And we're still not at the last state that I've been to. No. So next week, we are not going to Arkansas. We are going to Louisiana. So we're starting to hit them southern states.
That is a state I do
want
to visit, though. I want to go to New Orleans so bad.
Yeah, New Orleans would be dope to go visit. Not during hurricane season. But.
No. So, and I'll tell you the one reason why I want to go visit New Orleans. On that episode. So, cliffhanger.
Dun, dun, dun. All right. See you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.